Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right, Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
Crumbs, folks. This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Millers. I'm the slim, decent, practical chap. Goodness, I sound boring. That is Royfield Brown. And with me, I have the baffled Tinder user that is...
Kerry Warbis.
And the fit, sane, solvent cove that is...
Peter Fickling.
And the last part of this week's lockdown date, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum is from Francesca Wordsalad over there in Cardiff. And Crumbs, she was raving like it was 1989 with a bit of the old Barwick's thrown in. So it's a bit of Barwick House, folks. There you go. Thank you for that, Francesca. Now, Kerry, if someone would like to send us in a Dumpty Dum, do they need to mix it and like it's 1989? Or how do they go about it if they'd like to do that?
Do it any old way, but if you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105. Leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send a text message starting with Dum to 077 862 00690. Thanks to Yokel Bear and Millie Bell, our social media supremos, Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Mike Hatton for his character counts, Shambridge for her voices, and to Lucy V. Freeman.
Now, last week, folks, we said volunteers were wanted. We were looking for archers enthusiasts and Dumpty Dum listeners to be part of our podcast team. Now, we would like to welcome the following:
Elsa Luty, Amber Reeves Piggott, Sue Lee, Sandra Jenkinson, Lillian McCarthy as new members of the Dumpty Dum team.
On this week's episode, we hear calls from Jack, Merlin, Fiona, Josh, Glynn, Rob, Williams, Paul from Suffolk, B12, Simon, Erica, Emma and Beth. You know what that means, folks? We have some bee news. Bee Corner is back. So if you like your insects furry and with wings, this is the podcast for you. And if you also like a little bit of the archers, we can also help you with that too. And I've completely forgotten what the hell the debate of the week is.
The hot topic.
Yeah, the hot topic. There you
come
go.
Come on, Royfield.
Well, it's not on the
you
script.
Know what it's about.
It's not on the script. I did actually forget in the moment because I was
nowhere
struggling.
Does it say what is the hot topic on the script. So it's good old Lizzie and dating, and who would we date and how would we do it in Ambridge?
Oh, All right, then. So there you go. There you go, folks. This is this week's Hot Topic. Well, the world of online dating. What I was going to say is come to Ambridge, but that's not quite true. It's only just come to Ambridge. We has actually touched Ambridge with this brush before, because Roy Tucker's done a little bit of the online swiping, hasn't he? But, you know, we feel properly invested in it now, because our Lizzie has decided to dip her toe into Tinder, Bumble, Coffee with Bagels. So what are the pickings going to be like in mid-Borsetshire, do we reckon? Obviously, there are going to be lots of farmers. There might be one or two, you know, people who've done their starter marriage, maybe done their second marriage, and, you know, not quite ready for the knackers heat. We're giving it one last hurrah, you know, a slightly knackered bit of landed gentry. Maybe there's some good estate managers out there for our Lizzie. What type of thrusting man can she expect?
I'm now thinking about, if you're looking at Ambridge in itself, I know you said it in Borsetshire, but Ambridge itself, you know, if we were going to be choosing someone from Ambridge itself, my age range, it would be either David, who's slightly older than me, or Alistair, who's Shula's sloppy seconds. Not sure I'd want to do that. And then below age range, it's Roy.
No, someone rather cruelly suggested that would be a good match, Kerry.
That was Royfield, wasn't it?
Not me at all that said that'd be a good match. But wait on a minute.
That was you, wasn't it?
It was Peter that said that.
Yeah.
I was on about Lizzie finding matches, because I've kind of pulled this back to the fact that we are actually trying to cobble together an Archers fan podcast, as opposed to helping Kerry Warbis and and her love life.
I'm a bit disappointed with how horrible she's being about Ifty. She's really sort of judging him and saying, oh, he's let himself go, really boring, was he always like that? Calm down. I thought that was a bit nasty.
Only a week ago she was planning the wedding, and then this week he was basically relegated to being some kind of stoner loser who had no prospects or hopes. Yeah.
You know, she's not going to cut any corners in terms of appearance by the sounds of it. They're going to have to be quite sharp.
Trying to be a bit sort of Kerry about it and be a bit analytical, what would serve the plot of the Archers best? I know what would be true to life, but what would actually be a kind of useful or compelling plot line? The doomed relationship with an immensely unsuitable person, but they've kind of got that covered with Russ already. They've kind of done that plot line a few times. Maybe it's the kind of super exploitative kind of a person who is after the stately home. I haven't got anything better than that, I'm afraid.
No, I think she plot-wise, you know, and to suit us, I think she would need someone who's really lovely and cares for her.
What you think they actually? What they just?
I know
go
that's
for,
boring. Just but... go for,
she did do some hard yards servicing the Roy and Hayley plotline, didn't she? servicing Roy in the tent. So,
and you mentioned Russ. Someone on Twitter, genius, said that wouldn't it be great if Lizzie stumbled upon Russ on this dating website?
Well, that would be quite interesting.
There was some flirting between Russ and Lizzie, wasn't there?
Was there?
Oh, God, yeah.
When it was kind of, oh, Russ, you're so helpful and you're so wonderful and thank you and no one else has listened to me about this, and you know, he was driving her places and they'd gone out for a meal together.
Russell. Yeah, it was all, and Lily was not there at that point, was she? I can't remember.
Exactly. Russ and Lily were on a bit of a rocky patch.
I always thought that Russ played that with a very straight bat, and it was Lizzie, who was all kind of giggly and maybe flirtatious, but Russ was just like, you know, yes, Elizabeth, no, Elizabeth type of thing.
I think the thing about it was that they were better suited when they were chatting to each other, and obviously more age appropriate. They just seemed to gel more than Russ and Lily.
I don't half agree with that, by the way, Auntie Kerry. But trying to think of the type of bloke who Elizabeth is going to encounter.
A tree surgeon. Someone who can be trusted at heights.
Hey. I don't want to like play the class card here, because I like to see myself as someone who's quite confident and I can go out into any social circumstance. But if I'm going to have a date with somebody, and I don't necessarily know an awful lot about them other than, you know, I kind of quite like the look of them, we've exchanged a few texts, emails, whatever, and made each other laugh, and we appear to get on. And they invite me back, let's say, on second or third date to their stately home. I am going to be somewhat, I don't want to say intimidated, but apprehensive, let's say, because that is something to take on, is it not? You know, somebody who, yes, we know that Lizzie grew up on a farm, but, you know, that's a whole level of social standing, wealth, whether it's liquid wealth or not, et cetera, which is beyond my kind of understanding and general knowledge, that I'd be like, whoa.
Got to walk past a bunch of protesters trying to pull down Nigel's ancestor statue at the front, get in there, there's a portrait of Nigel. You know, there's a lot of reminders of her past to field.
So are you saying that it will need to be someone sort of relatively equal standing?
I think that's what I'm saying. But, you know, the caveat is that she grew up as a farmer's daughter. So it's not as if she was born into the gentry or the lower aristocracy. She isn't. But she is of that standing now, and she's in a big, bloody big pile. There is a whole kind of heady cocktail of potentially, as Peter just alluded to, of class and then race and aspiration kind of thrown at this. And whenever I've spoken to specifically women in their 50s who are young in spirit and like they're still active and want to go out and grab life by the ghoulies, no pun intended, they frequently complain about that a lot of their contemporary matches feel older.
Yeah.
They are a little bit beaten up, a little bit tired, and just don't have that kind of zest for life. And I think what Lizzie needs is definitely somebody who still has a zest for life.
Yeah.
Who's going to want to do things, go places.
Excite her. Yeah.
Exactly. Not be a Nigel clone, but somebody who is, dare I say, energetic. Kerry, you're a woman that's averse of these mechanisms of finding a partner. What is your dating app of choice?
Oh, God. I have done it in the past quite successfully. I think, in the olden days, the one that I used, Guardian Soulmates, a long time ago, and did find a partner with whom I stayed for 7 years. So that's a relative success, isn't it? However, this week,
I was going to ask what qualified as success, and I think, yes, that is 7 years, good.
Surely success is one partner outliving the other, and you're in your dotage, you know, and you're looking, and at the funeral, you know, you're looking at the grandchildren and the children that you share together. That's success, surely.
So that's quite binary, though, isn't it? That means that you're either a failure or a success story.
There you go. We live in a digital world, Peter. Everything is binary. It's ones and zeros.
Have you never online dated, Royfield?
I have a little bit of a history with this way of finding a partner. Way back when I ran an online company, we actually started our own online dating service, and this is before you could in effect get them white label off the shelf. So I did that many moons ago, and I remember I had to tell my staff to write fake profiles because you needed profiles up there to attract replies and stuff. So I have done the old Guardian Soulmates as well. Yes, Peter.
Is there a support group for your staff? I might, you know, just ask them.
The thing was, everybody loved it. But, you know, people did have to go home and tell their respective partners, this is just a little bit of a wheeze and a lark. And then you got friends of friends and family members who were doing doing profiles. But I did actually go out on a date with somebody to prove that the whole system did work. And when she found out the day later that I actually ran the website, she sent me a quite terse email and said I was wasting her time. So yes. Oh. So Peter, you know, you have a very happy domestic setup, and of course the little Peter there is a proof positive how happy your domestic setup is. But when you're unhappy, before you came happy, did you swipe left, swipe right?
Well, I mean, obviously I sat like a frog in the desert awaiting the rains before, you know, that's just single for another decade. But in alternative universes, yeah, I did. I actually, sorry, this is 2 out of 3. I also tried to start up a dating website. I moved to Singapore to start up 2 businesses, and it was catastrophically unsuccessful. So the cow selling business kind of got off the ground, but the dating website never did. But I mean, I think it's a personality thing. I'm not built for it. I just don't have whatever it takes to.
What, you're not built to setting up a dating website?
Both. I'm not built for going out there and taking the relentless knocks and, you know, beating down some terrible dates it takes. I think you need a lot of endurance to do the dating scene, online dating scene. And I think it's be interesting to see if Elizabeth could do it.
I was just going to say, times have changed so much, though, since Dating Direct. It seems practically Victorian now that I think about it. I went on Tinder this week just to sort of see what it looks like. You know, I've been a year single. And I thought, oh, let's have a look. And before I knew it, there was this guy on a picture in front of me, and I tried to get his picture away, which meant that I swiped and said that I liked him. And I was so afraid, I shut the app down. Roaring success.
I've been with friends, and that they just, you know, they're addicted. They're absolutely addicted to is it Tinder the one? And yeah, they just don't, every minute that you've gone off to get a drink, or you know, you turn your back for 5 seconds, they're swiping left and right, and they go absolutely bananas if you try and go anywhere near it, like the fear that you might try and stitch them up or kind of, you know, do a wrong swipe.
So
I don't think I can do that instant sort of, you know, the looking, judging, swiping thing. No. I mean, but you know, looks have
not after
play, yes, but not so ruthlessly. I can't do that.
What type of man do we think that our Elizabeth is going to find, find on Tinder, bearing in mind that she's 53, in the middle of Borsetshire on Tinder? And is even Tinder the right platform for her?
Well, I mean, she'd meet a different man if she wrote her own bloody profile, or based on Jolene's one, really, wouldn't she? They're going to be different creatures.
I can only speak for myself, but maybe Royfield feels the same way, but I find solvent women incredibly attractive. Just the, you know, knowing that they have...
She should have just written, own stately home.
I don't know, Auntie Kerry, how valid it is for the average bloke what a woman writes on a Tinder profile. I think there are many studies done on this, and generally us blokes, the heterosexual ones of us anyway, just go, I like the look of her, or I don't.
So it's Tinder women. Is right up your alley then?
I beg your pardon? Right, it's going to be one of those episodes, is it?
No, I mean, you know, the judging visually thing, Tinder is right up your alley. By the sounds of it,
Peter, you're male too, and I believe you're heterosexual. Can you come and rescue me? I feel like I'm being slowly boxed into a corner.
I think you kind of set yourself up because you said heterosexual men, and you know you are very well advertised, self-advertised as being a heterosexual man. So that's where you got into trouble. First of all, you have thumbnail hotties. That's the first big problem with online dating. People who look immensely good at 100 pixels by 100 pixels, and then you know you blow them up, and not literally, obviously, that's a whole different thing. But you know they're just you know bog monsters. I'm talking very specifically about this realm. This is not my general attitude towards, you know, my fellow human beings. I can't waste, no matter how hot someone is, you can't waste an evening of your life going out to meet someone who's obviously deranged.
You can't string 2 words together.
But isn't that just nerves, though? Somebody turns up for a date, and let's say they are a 53-year-old woman, never done online dating before, hasn't done dating since the 1980s. She's going to be tongue-tied. She's going to be a little bit nervous. That's going to be understandable.
Yeah, I more meant that, you know, you need to have written to each other a bit before, perhaps, no?
Yeah, definitely. That's quite exciting as well. If you've been, I mean, when I being deadly serious for a moment, I was in a long term relationship through all of my 20s, and so I hadn't kissed someone in 8 years, and so I was suddenly, you know, doing the whole internet dating thing. So I would fully Lizzie up and have marriage plans and kind of like, you know, what colour car are we buying, how are we going to redecorate the stately home? But, you know, I definitely was a bit Lizzie and sort of like, you know, what was it like Iftikhar? She was already marrying him in 5 minutes, and he's suffered since. But yes, no, I definitely someone who would, you know, enjoyed the messaging, to Kerry's point, but, you know, a bit of connection.
Mm. Yeah. Auntie Kerry, one of the things that we like to hear on Dumdy Dum is just to, you know, divulge of ourselves, so the listeners feel very close to us, that understand the psyche behind the voices on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So what type of gentleman are you looking for?
Sorry.
I don't have a type at all, I would say.
It definitely has type, right? Here we go.
No, I don't. Oh God, I definitely wouldn't go for someone really sort of muscly. You know, that kind of thing is really off-putting. Someone who has to be very funny. That's the main thing for me. They can have a beer belly as long as they're funny.
Do you actually have like a graph? Do you have a special graph that kind of with it all plotted out, sort of size of gut versus kind of, you know,
good jokes, ometer. Yeah. I'm not that wildly judgy on the physical stuff, to be honest with you. Honestly not. And I think women are less like that.
So basically you don't need to see the images of them on Tinder.
I'm saying that's not my key thing. It's not the main thing. Having said that, we'll have to see them, won't we, what they do with this.
We will. I think we've just about done that to death, which means, so what's the conclusions we come to, Peter, with our hot topic of the week?
I think it's going to go exactly the opposite way. She'll be back with Roy in about 10 minutes, and so we'll adopt a beautiful brace of smashing little chaps.
Brilliant. Now we've got that all sorted, let's have some caller inquiries.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Oh, always like to start off with a little bit of Jack. Jack!
Hello to the Dumpty Dum community, it's Jack here. I thoroughly enjoyed Harrison Burns' Venture Back into the Past, and to find out all the things that inspired him to become a police officer. It was very poignant to hear in his monologue, I must say, and well done to the scriptwriters and actor who performed it. Well, of course, the pub, the Bull in Ambridge, is now open, and we should have our very own pub on Zoom, just like we've had with the interviews, but just to talk to each other, the Dumpty Dummers. We could even have breakout rooms, and we could all talk about Dumpty Dum things, arches, or other things too. Now, can you tell me a little bit more about what is going on Sunday after the omnibus between Twitter and YouTube, and is there anything to actually listen to afterwards? It sounds very good what you're doing. Now, I'd really like to hear a lot more of Rosie Pawsey on the podcast. It's great to hear you on the Zoom interviews, some of the Zoom interviews, Rosie, but it would be really nice for you to call into the podcast a lot more, Rosie. Well, of course, the Pargita Triptych is back for a fourth episode. Thoroughly enjoyable, and well done to Graham Seed. Hopefully we'll have more of it, and make sure you become a Patreon of the Pargita Triptych. Now, you could get Dumpty Dum featured on the Radio Today podcast. It's a podcast run by Roy Martin and Stuart Clarkson, and they talk about all things radio and podcast, and you could get featured on there and get them to talk about Dumpty Dum to promote it. Now, last week you mentioned that the Aldridges are by far the most interesting family in Ambridge. So I'd like to ask people, who are the most boring or irritating family in Ambridge? I personally have to say that the Bridge Farm Archers are probably the most moany, but they're still acted and scripted very well. I'll speak to you all soon. Goodbye for now.
Thanks, Jack. Yeah, he's always got a lot to say, hasn't he? He went all over the shop.
I hope you were taking notes there, Auntie Kerry, because
I was indeed. I was. So he liked Harrison's past and said how poignant that was. And I enjoyed that too. To get another dimension to Harrison was good. You know, the reasons why he joined the police force and so on. Zoom pub, anyone up for a Zoom pub?
Well, we do have just very quickly before you tell us about your enforced sobriety there, Peter, this Friday we do have Sonny Ormond, who plays Lillian Bellamy, who's going to be our Tim Bentick was going to be our last actor Zoom Friday, didn't I? But 7 o'clock, you have a little bit of Lillian. And maybe afterwards, it should devolve into a little bit of a pub session. So if you want to, I believe we're all going to bring our bottles of gin, aren't we? Peter was very clear last week when we first said this. He says, not singular, but definitely plural. Bring your bottles of gin, bring a good attitude. And then when Sonny disappears after an hour or so, maybe we can all continue to chat. I don't know. What do you reckon, Kerry?
I'd love that. Yes. Smashing. Always up for a drink and a natter.
I think you promised the Lillian drinking game as well.
I did.
Two shots for a cackle, one shot for a mention of Ruby. You know, it'll devolve very, very quickly.
What'd you get for a tiger?
Oh, come on. Those are good old days.
What else did our Jack mention?
He'd love Harrison. Yeah. Big fan of Harrison and Rosie Porty calling in.
That means that's the end of you then, Kerry. But obviously calling we got our theme. No, I thought you meant hosting.
You said calling in, Royfield. Don't get ahead of yourself.
Oh, okay, sorry.
it's a new person a week. I mean, Quentin's already got rid of me with his smooth voice. Now Rosie's coming for Kerry. I mean, it's brutal.
Yeah, should we just run away together, Peter, and do something different?
What a rival Archer's podcast.
Not another one. there'll be some other black Dumdy Dum listener that'll be calling in next week to take my place. Oi, hands off. So Jack, thank you for that comprehensive call, sir. As always, we thank you for being a valued member of the Dumdy Dum community. Now we're going over to Jersey. It's Merlin.
Hello, everyone in Dumdy Dum land. This is Merlin here in New Jersey. I know it's been a little while. I've just got back from walking the dog and watching Cooper's Hawks teaching their youngsters how to fly. So I've had a wonderful morning. I've been thinking about the monologues. I don't have as much of a problem as many do. I'm just very grateful that they're managing to do something. But I think you can tell the difference between the different writers, and that's part of the issue. Some of them do write as though you're really hearing someone's thoughts, and others are breaking the fourth wall. The Padre de Triptychs break the fourth wall. He's talking to us as listeners, and that's fine because it's completely separate. But the Archers is us listening in on something happening. So any of those monologues which break the fourth wall and sound like they're talking directly to us, those seem strange and out of context. And I think that's part of the issue. I was incredibly glad to hear Debbie come back. And if nothing else, then it's been wonderful for that opportunity to hear her. I was nearly broken by the week that was Helen and Natasha together. That was really desperate. Not my favourite people, although hearing Natasha did mean that I got to hear the word kutch, which is, I just love as a word. It's one of my favourite words. So that made me happy. And that's probably about it. Can't think of anything else. So I hope everyone's staying safe and take care. And I'll speak again sometime.
Oh, nice to hear from Merlin again. He's been grateful for the monologues. And I mentioned about hearing the differences between the writers, because we've touched on this before, haven't we, about, you know, during the week, there'll be two different writers, perhaps, one doing two episodes and another doing the other two. and being able to notice the difference. I can't say I've spotted that so much. What about you two?
Well, this week, I really enjoyed this week. And last episode, I made the promise to be incredibly positive. So I was very happy when it started with a bang. I mean, we haven't talked about Harrison's pot banging yet, but I think that might be controversial. But this week you really could see some of the gear changes between the sort of one. It wasn't necessarily different writers, but between the different actors and the different settings, and it sort of made you realise just how much effort is made to help you. Sort of, you can have Eddie and Clary kind of having a big old sort of slightly tongue in cheek sort of argument or ding dong in the kitchen, and then you're across to Helen, who's being very serious about her cheese, and they've got some very clever techniques in the Normal Archers for helping you bridge those gaps. And I think the immediacy of the monologues makes it a lot harder for the writer to do it. So I don't think it's just writer to writer, but sometimes they can't do those segues from a kind of they can't do a segue from a Kenton and Jolene Peacock argument to Harrison, you know, pouring out his heart quite as neatly. Although this week I think they did a much better job, because you did have the kind of triangle with Kenton and Harrison on one face, Jolene and Kenton on the other, and then everyone else on the third.
Peter, going back to you and the Zoom pub, would you drink gin or something if there was a Zoom pub this Friday? I know you've abstained.
Royfield has seen me pour literally gallons of pissy, terrible American beer down my throat. But these days I'm living the cleanest of clean lives. I'm basically on the wagon till the pandemic's over. So I would have to sort of sit bitterly and metaphorically in the corner and just watch you all get absolutely smashed. So I'll probably slip off halfway through.
Yeah.
I think.
So we've done Merlin, we've done Jack, and now I think it's time for a touch of the Fiona's.
Hi, Royfield, Kerry, Peter and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Fiona from Manchester calling again. I just wanted to say that I'm really enjoying the monologues. I like hearing how people's reflections on their lives and how past actions are influencing them now. For example, Harrison's motivation for becoming a police officer, or Adam's guilt at cheating on Ian. I think we're getting to know the characters at a deeper level, which for me is really interesting. Also, I don't agree with those who say we're treading water with the storyline. Normally the Archers can be very slow and sometimes boring, without much happening from day to day. Plenty of the characters have made potentially life-changing decisions during lockdown, including Alice quitting her job, Freddie finding his place at Lower Loxley, and Elizabeth starting dating again. Even Adam has had a go at solo parenting for an entire day. However, hopefully Susan's stint as a DJ will be short-lived, as I'm finding her show painful to listen to. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks for listening, and thanks for Dumpty Dum. Bye.
Well, that was good, Fiona, wasn't he? Yeah, she makes a few good points there about, you know, are we treading water or not? And then did list a couple of things that have happened, but fairly recently, I think. You know, Adam saying about regret about his cheating and managing to do the parenting thing for a couple of hours, plus the Lizzie dating thing. And other than that, and Harrison's reasons for becoming a police officer, I think things have gone up a little bit of a gear, haven't they, in the recent ones, in terms of stuff happening, and also mentioning more COVID specific things, such as, you know, taking your temperature and the screens in the pub. And it actually sounds a bit more contemporary.
I don't have any intel, and I'd be interested if Royfield did, but I feel that there have been a few examples of where this format might have given them the chance to be a bit more nimble. And also, I think now that we're two months into the monologues, Archer's time and real time has both become muddied, right? But I do feel that they're now finding a new way of directing the plot. And so, for instance, Royfield's, I think, 100% accurate theory about Harrison being kind of lined up to sort of like turn his career around and crack the big Moss Brothers crime ring, that's starting to all fall into place. But it's taken them a while to kind of to get there. And I think it's working quite well now.
I was thinking about the monologues this week, and, you know, it's no surprise, but I'm in the camp of people who are slightly struggling with them. And I was trying to really understand what they were, other than filling in dead air or being placeholders, etc. And quite simple, I think really what they are is a manifestation of the writer's whiteboards of the characters. And actually what they have done is to completely and utterly strip away any mystery as to the emotional complexity, the emotional drivers of any of the characters. And I was always really struck that I've spoken to Tim Bentinck a few times now about David, and he always says this. He says, David is still reeling from the fact that Ruth basically had an affair. She didn't consummate it, but she had an affair 10 plus years ago. And he's desperate that this never happens again. He is much more beloved of her than she is of him. And he said the same thing when we did our Zoom the other day with him. Now, if you're just a casual listener of The Archers, you wouldn't get that nuance. And I'm hardly a casual listener, but I hadn't heard that. But when he said that, it made sense. So I think for all of us people who are bitching and moaning about these monologues, and I'm definitely have been one, so I'm not, you know, throwing rocks in at people in that camp. There is gold to be had listening to these monologues and then remembering what the characters have said and what a picture it paints of their psyche, of their neuroses, of their core drivers, because we're going to be able to understand when it kicks into the traditional narratives, we'll be able to understand the characters much better. And so let's go back to what I said really at the start of this, is that if you imagine the writer's whiteboard, when they go, right, David Archer, what is he? You know, son of Phil and Jill, he's the farmer, but then he's the slings and arrows that have actually made him David Archer, and one of them is going to be the fact that he thought his wife at one point had a recurrence of cancer, but actually she was having an affair, and how he is terrified of that kind of coming back type of thing, of that situation ever coming back. And so with that alone, it is a reason for us to dig in, us old school Archers fans, to dig into these and go, right, I get it now that, let's say, Adam feels unloved from his father or stepfather, etc. I think we've kind of worked that out, but still, it was there, isn't it? It was completely and utterly there. And if we can go through the various other characters, major characters who have done monologues and to get those little bits of gold. And of course, with Harrison and the bullying, we didn't know that at all.
David, I'd like to hear the, you know, his insecurities being voiced by him.
Yes.
I do think it was maybe a little bit clever by the script writers to have, you know, Helen completely was a deep dive into, you know, neuroses. And, you know, again, long-term listeners kind of had worked everything out. There were no real surprises, but she said it. Whereas the male characters aren't self-aware, are they? In large part. You know, they talk about things very situationally. You know, David was talking about lasagna. There's a little bit of talk about him and Josh, but it wasn't, you know, I feel insecure, I feel, you know, I didn't get hugs type of thing. I feel apart from, you know, my family, so to speak. You have to infer that through them just getting through their days, where the female characters are much more in tune with their emotions and actually with their past and how the past has shaped them in the present.
Kerry cracked a very funny but sort of intelligent joke a couple of weeks ago about Russ. Like, is he strategically evil, or is he just kind of bumblingly accidentally evil? And you kind of get the same thing with a kind of watered down version with David when he was sort of bullying Joy. I think, is that too strong a word? I don't feel it is. You know, it was just kind of a stream of consciousness of someone who's just kind of treading all over another person's feelings unthinkingly. Whereas, to your point, Royfield, like with Helen, you would have heard her desperately sort of concerned about every tiny nuance of that. And also like what it says about her.
Absolutely. So the moral of the story is that women are much better than men.
I mean, try and think of examples from either side that buck that.
Well, to be fair, Harrison does, because Harrison this week, and Harrison was all talking about his feelings and whatever, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah. Harrison is the exception that proves the rule.
I mean, you can't get much more public than broadcasting it on a radio show, can you, really?
Mm-hmm.
I got the impression from the very brief messages I saw on WhatsApp that you two were not moved by Harrison's outpouring. Can I confess now that I did shed the tiniest little tear hearing Harrison talk about his bullying and how he dealt with it? Not a big one, just the tiniest moistening of one of my eyes.
I did enjoy that. As I mentioned a bit earlier, I was glad to hear a different side to him and a bit more depth to him. Whether he would have actually exposed that on a radio show, I'm not entirely convinced. However, that's okay. I'll let you know.
Let them, I think that's why I enjoyed that. This week so much.
Mm.
Sorry, Kerry.
And then they kind of week. Yeah, carry on. Sorry.
It was, first of all, it was fairly uniform. So back to the earlier point, you know, we weren't having to jump too much between different tones. It was kind of consistently sort of heightened. So Harrison, they sped up what could have been weeks of exposition into a kind of like a 30-second radio show from Harrison. I mean, that was a bit unrealistic, but, you know, once you kind of got with it, it was fine. And also Kenton and Jolene, all of that is just like nonsense, obviously, but it's just fun. You know, it's just a fun sideline plot. And I really enjoyed the week, because I think for once it was tonally consistent, and also was the kind of Archers I enjoy, where they're not trying to make it realistic. None of it felt realistic. It was all a bit kind of you know, Hollywood.
Yeah. What did you think about Harrison sort of going, "Oh, will she leave me because I haven't stayed in on date night?"
I think the same thing. I think it's exactly the same thing. They allowed themselves the poetic license of summing up a broader problem in a kind of like an unrealistically truncated or some small snippet.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did think that the pots and pans being clanged was just too much.
Of course it was. He'd barely finished the sentence and there was a throng with saucepans outside the radio studio.
Mm.
That was a shame.
He was recording from home though, wasn't he? He'd sort of gone upstairs to...
It doesn't matter though. There is utterly no way, right, that... in any circumstance that, and this is, and I'm stealing this from the wonderful Quentin Rayner, that's very smooth voiced Silver Fox, when he said yesterday on the Zoom that who listens to local radio / community radio, you know, you barely get 15 people listening to it, but all of a sudden everybody in Ambridge was tuning in and spontaneously all decided to knock their pots and pans and to applaud. It's just
within minutes.
It wasn't even within minutes, Kerry. It was seconds. He hadn't even finished, and already Ambridge was just like out there, you know, clapping its finest. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that he didn't deserve that, but there is no way on any earth that I've been on that would have happened spontaneously.
I'm sorry, I very much got the impression that Susan Carter was enjoying the same kind of popularity arc that Adrian Cronar did in Good Morning Vietnam. Like, you know, she was parachuted in as an emergency, and then weeks later the whole of the county is just tuning in with bated breath, and Harrison was able to ride that wave home to the beach.
You're probably
good
right,
morning,
Peter, obviously.
Ambridge. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. She probably loves
I feel a full
arm in the morning. Anyway, Josh, we have a new caller in. This is Josh, and he's up next.
Greetings, Royfield, and all the Dumpty Dum co-hosts and listeners. This is Josh in an undisclosed location of the USA, and this is my first time caller innering. I am still a bit conflicted about which character represents my starting to listen to the Archers. I think the best answer is Jim Lloyd, although I swear I recognize a smattering of the 2006 storylines. This is fitting, though, as I am an ex-academic, although I moved to another field as opposed to retiring to Ambridge. The story of how I came to listen to the Archers is long, complicated, and of interest to no one. It does, however, start with listening to the relatively short-lived docudrama West Way in my college dormitory on an actual shortwave radio back before the North America service was cut in 2008, and takes a detour through the then BBC Six music of all places. I disagree with just about all of you with regard to the monologues. I like them. This is perhaps because I use the Archers as a way to calm my mind during work breaks or while doing chores. It is a meditation, or perhaps more accurately, a mindfulness technique to quiet the thoughts about work and family. While I recognize the value of dramatic plot lines like Rob and Helen, and was stunned by how well Jim Lloyd's arc has gone, I am happiest with Pip and David arguing over the moisture content of grass, intrigue over the fruit and produce show, and just about any plotline with Jazzer. To use more recent examples, Freddy's fixing a toilet, fly tippers, and Alice's slow descent into alcoholism. I like to think of the Archers as a real place, and thus it needs to be boring most of the time, especially these days. Perhaps we can get an episode of Josh and Adam bickering while fixing a tractor because neither bothered to change the transmission oil, or Natasha reading her credit card statements out loud, or Henry carefully explaining each and every joke in an episode of Giggle Biz to Pat while she increasingly agitated and finally takes him for a very non-organic McDonald's burger to shut him up. Anyways, we all listen for different reasons, and I enjoy hearing your thoughts and those of the Dumpty Dum world.
Welcome, Josh. That was refreshing, wasn't it?
Josh sounds very young for a retired man.
I'm suspicious of Josh. Why wouldn't he disclose his location?
Oh.
You know, he...
Is he in the White House or something?
That's the longest I've heard Trump go without sniffing in a long while.
Oh, God. Just, I am equally intrigued about that.
Well, I think what Peter said is you know, well, why didn't he want to tell us? Unless he's working for the FBI and the CIA and he's like deep undercover, and the operational reasons is the reason why he can't disclose his location.
So he's not really called Josh either, then.
There you go. I think he's just embarrassed about the fact that he works for the current administration, and he is in the White House right now. You know, okay. An office That's just off the
CSI. CSI Josh. So I think we can say from the accent, I'm pretty sure. I'm feeling confident on that. I think also he's obviously got a very high octane life, because Archers is purely there as a place to relax and calm down. Mm. What else did we have? What did he study at university? Did we get that?
He's an academic, but didn't reveal that. You know,
he's a burnt out academic.
Does Trump listen? This is my next question.
Who? Oh, good Lord.
I know. We're going to see some Trump tweets in the tweet along next omnibus.
Wouldn't that be a thing? Wouldn't that be a thing? If Trump has been outed not only as an Archers fan, but also as a Dumpty Dummer, I would maybe have to leave the podcast. I couldn't. It wouldn't sit well with me if Donald Trump liked this podcast, if he was actually a fan.
if he's been a massive Royfield fan. Yeah.
No, we'd seriously have to take a long, hard look at ourselves.
How are you going to? Sorry to cross streams like Ghostbusters, but how are you going to deal with Trump when you finally get to him in your American Presidents podcast?
Not doing him.
Are you going to acknowledge that?
Because it's 10 American presidents, so it's the 10 pivotal presidencies, and arguably, so with Obama is one of the 10, and with him, we're not doing his time in office, we're just doing him running for election, because arguably it's too close in time to really give it a proper historical analysis. But you can talk about him running and being the first non-white man to run and the symbolism of that and what that meant not only to America but also to the rest of the world. We've dealt with Trump in terms of, we did an episode on impeachment, all the presidents that have been impeached, and actually, little known fact, the first public officer in America who was impeached was actually a Supreme Court justice. You know, we think about it as just being the president, but there was a Supreme Court justice in the early 1800s who's actually impeached. I think it was Justice Clay, but I could be wrong. Anyway, we have talked about Trump, but there's not going to be an episode about Trump because it wouldn't be fair. We're too caught up in the moment, you know. So, but he better not be a dumby dumber.
Maybe you can do it next year after he's been assassinated or something.
No, Kerry, still be too soon. Did everybody see excerpts of his Fox News interview?
Insanity, absolute insanity. Just before I forget, can we, seeing as we were talking about Obama, he said there were some very lovely stories about him and John Lewis. So just maybe an RAP John Lewis. I think that's worth saying.
Yes, it's a good time reminder that that line of civil rights did pass this weekend, and he was somebody who the present incumbent of the Oval Office mocked and called him a coward some 18 months ago, not at all knowing his history and actually what he'd done, and, you know, him crossing the bridge at Selma, etc., etc., you know. But anyway, moving swiftly on, we are a podcast about contemporary rural issues as opposed to...
Are we?
The issues of 2020 and the incumbent in the White House. Glyn, full of love, pull us back on our normal path, sir.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here. First, let me say I'm enjoying the new 3-presenter format for Dumpty Dum. And I particularly enjoyed your ruminations on the Aldridges last week. They definitely are the most interesting family in Ambridge. This week, though, I found rather less of interest in the Archers. I didn't find the Peacock Wars or Liz's dating profile particularly compelling listening. But at least we have learned more about what I suppose you'd call one of the more peripheral characters through the monologues, as we did with Natasha a few weeks ago, this time being, of course, Sergeant Burns. And we found out that he was bullied at school. Call me a softie if you will, but I did have a tear in my eye at the end of Thursday's episodes. It does rather beg the question about whether we would ever have found out about the bullying of Harrison Burns at school without lockdown. But I guess that's one of the mysteries of Ambridge that will never be solved, along with most of the crime in the village, of course. But there you go. Well, thanks as ever for the podcast, and to all in Dumpty Dum land, stay safe. Bye.
Oh, Glyn, very kind of you to say that you're enjoying the three of us. That's a relief. not interested in the Peacock Wars or Lizzie's dating, but the Harrison bit ticked your box, made you shed a tear. Bless you. Yeah.
I mean, I also shed a small tear, as I said earlier on, but there was a moment in the Harrison bit where he went full kind of Spider-Man's Captain America, sort of explaining how the bullying rise to being a fearless crime fighter. That was did jar a little bit. But I think we do owe Harrison a little bit of an apology. We've given him a right old kicking over the last few weeks. And actually, the bit that moved me more, and I actually think sort of set me up for the floods of tears, was actually a prosaic and sort of slightly regretful descriptions of his day's work. And also you did get to see him being a very good policeman, sort of dealing with that kind of small domestic dispute. So, you know, like Roy Field, myself, you, Kerry, we all, you know, derided him, called him Columbo. And here he is just doing an honest and decent job.
Yeah. And he actually was sort of, you know, hedge wars. He was like, oh, it's hardly thrilling, is it? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. He recognised that it's a little bit humdrum what he's doing. But, you know, actually he's sorting things out for people, isn't he?
Yeah. And he did you not think I mean... Sorry, I'm not your approval, but yeah, I am begging for your approval. Did you think I had a point about that he did a good job? Did you get a sense that he was sort of, you know, bringing the appropriate amount of diplomacy but firmness to the situation?
Yeah, I do. And also, it was quite touching how he talked about his wife, wasn't it? On the
radio.
Yeah.
I think you went full Kerry forensic on the amount of, you know, that you were the first person to spot that maybe he was reacting too strongly to, you know, to one night of a failed date night. But I think broadly it sort of was quite nice to hear him so concerned. And it did actually make me think, am I concerned enough about my poor wife? I'm an absolute, you know, I'm a monster.
Oh, well, that's some good has come of it then.
yeah, absolutely. I haven't acted on it, Kerry. That's a whole different thing.
Oh, come on. Yeah. Are you waiting for after the pandemic then to become more considerate?
I'll the pandemic finishes and I'll become considerate and drunk overnight.
Okay, cool.
Ooh, awesome. Well, that's a revelation indeed, Mr. Fickling. Glyn Fuller Love, we thank you for that, sir. And now we have an ex-member of Take That.
Hi there. Hello, all at Dumpty Dum Land again. It's Rob Williams. This time, I'm going to apologise to Kerry. Apparently, my last message was extremely short. Believe it or believe it not, I was about the 17th go of making a message after I'd managed to get through it without all the stutters and coughs and flubs and everything. That's why it ended up being down to about 15 seconds or something. So I apologise to Kerry mainly because I obviously shocked her finishing so soon. Sorry. And also, it just makes me full of envy for all the other caller inners that they can sound so professional. I just sound like some sort of village idiot. Hey ho. Oh. One thing that did spring to mind, everybody was saying about how wonderful Tamsin Gregg was in Green Wing, and yes, she was. What I would say though, check out episodes. She is brilliant in that, playing a screenwriter again with Stephen Mangan, only this time we've got what's his name, Matt LeBlanc, playing a fictionalized version of Joey Tribbiani, playing himself basically on this program. There you go. I made a mistake last time, I would have cut that out. Hey ho. Take care, everybody. Keep safe and enjoy your listening monologue pleasures.
Rob Williams, you're not a village idiot at all. And I was just sort of surprised rather than disappointed. So well done for getting back on that bicycle and ringing in again. I haven't seen that episode. Have you guys?
I haven't watched the series at all.
Yeah, it is good. It's got the slightly more kind of down at heel, kind of whimsical, sort of negative side to kind of English sitcoms, but then it's got the production values of American sitcoms. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's the best of both worlds, but you can kind of see they've tried to take the influences from both. Because, I mean, I prefer American comedy. I find it, you know, at the end of a long day, I can't really deal with all of the negativity. Like, you know, The American Office was much easier for me. But I think, yeah, it does well to sort of bridge the gap. Mm. Royfield, as someone who's got a lot more experience than me and I think Kerry as well, of course, at listening to the caller inners being very professional. How do you deal with the consistent professionalism and brilliance of the caller inners compared to our occasionally more amateur efforts? You know, as the most experienced person here.
I've had, 6 years now of being put in my place by the slickness of everybody who I've worked with. It's not just the caller inners, Peter. You know, I am the lead weight in the whole production. But I wear it as a badge of pride now.
I see. Now I understand why you got me in. I'm the new kicking. I'm the new punch bag. You want to kind of retire from that position. Okay, got it. I understand.
I actually like the ones that are a bit more rough around the edges, to be honest.
Oh, you're talking about your dating profile again?
Yeah.
And the type of men you attract?
No. It sounded like that, but no.
Right, I tell you what we should do. We should go to Paul from Suffolk and then we should revisit this, because otherwise this episode is going to be 3 hours long.
Okay.
Hello, Royfield, Auntie Kerry and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. Paul from Suffolk here. and I'm really excited. I've just listened to Thursday's episode of The Archers, and I really, really, really enjoyed it. I thought it this week has been really touching. I love Harrison Burns. I'm a big fan of both his, and I think it's James Cartwright, the actor, a very attractive and very talented actor. And I loved the fact that they had multiple characters speaking during the episode. I loved the vulnerability that was shown by Harrison Burns and how well it was acted. I love the fact that we got Jolene and we got Kenton. And I love the fact that this week as well, they've started to move the timeline on a bit. So the pub is now open, doing takeaways. And I think we're starting to see a little bit more of an alignment between the real world and the Archer's world as well. So while I didn't enjoy the monologues to start off with, I really have felt that they have grown on me. And I think as the team have become more adept at managing the technology, they've become more sophisticated, and it's worked really, really well. So yes, I recognize there's been some negativity and I've contributed towards that, but yay for positivity and yay for Harrison Burns and yay for clapping on the green. All those good things. Take care, everyone. Stay safe.
Yay, Paul, for positivity. We're all trying to be positive this week, aren't we? So we will happily join in with your positivity. And yeah, he loves Harrison. He's a big Harrison fan. We did touch upon earlier about, you know, I think I said about the pub being open and the screens and, you know, they're doing takeaways. And I did wonder, because that happened on the 4th of July, wasn't it, when the pubs opened in the UK?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And have they started writing more close to the airing of the episodes, do you think? Or to have got that kind of detail that- in? Mm.
I was thinking that they were probably placeholding some blocks. So you could write Jolene and Kenton in the pub, Peacock drama, and you could have a placeholder for, you know, the COVID portion. And so you only have to hold back the writing of those sections and also the recording. So, I mean, I say only, you know, it's obviously probably a lot more complex than that. And that would then feed into my kind of my theory that I think I've given a couple of times, that whilst, you know, that's why they've done this, that's the driver, so they can bring in this sort of slightly closer relevance.
Do you think they're inserts then, like slightly later inserts about the take your temperature and the screens are up? And
I mean, I guess, I don't know enough about the technology. I mean, I guess that might be that you'd have to have consistency of tone, which might be difficult to do, But yeah, I don't see, from a scripting point of view, that could be quite plausible, couldn't it? Mm. You could just have the COVID bit. Because like you were saying, the comments about the screens, that could just as easily have been them being anxious about the fact that the pub was empty and that they're gearing up for it to open. Like, they, you know, they could have easily tweaked it according to the government rules.
Yeah.
Which none of us can, but, you know, they could do.
Yeah.
There you go. Positivity has been mentioned. Well done, Paul. Now it's B12 from Simon, and he's from Borsall Heath in my own hometown of Birmingham.
Hello, Royfield, Kerry and gang. This is B12 Simon. It's been a while, but still listening and still opinionated about the Archers. Just wanted to do a couple of things. I mean, firstly, the Corona monologues. It's all right, but yeah, we do what we do. We're all making compromises and making sacrifices, and the Archers is doing just that. The other thing is Debbie. Delighted to see her back. I do wonder where the being homesick story is going to go. If she ends up coming back to Britain, I mean, okay, Tamsin Greig might have a bit of time at the moment for the Archers, but I think as soon as things are back to normal, as soon as theatre and film is back to normal, then maybe she won't be. And I think if she's a silent character in the village, that'll be a bit more... bit more grating than in if she's a silent character in Hungary. Well, that's my 2p anyway. Still loving the show. Thanks to all for all the work. Hopefully I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye now.
Nice one, B12 Simon. Yeah, he thinks it's all right. We are all making compromises, aren't we? He mentions Debbie and like, woo, I'm glad she's back as well. And when I was doing my chart of the ages of people... today on my day off from work, Debbie's coming up to being 50, and I was thinking, ooh, she's, you know, keeps talking about the possibility of returning. That would be quite a good reason for her to come back as well, wouldn't it?
Can she, though? If ever there was one character who we struggle to separate from the actor that plays her, it's Debbie, isn't it? Everybody always says it. They go Debbie, they go Tamsin, they go Debbie. So if this was Rob coming back, none of us are attuned to what the actor of Rob is actually doing. It could be in a blockbuster Hollywood movie at the moment. But no one's saying, "Oh, we can't really come back because he's doing this. He's doing the next Marvel movie, or anybody really."
I know, so, but she doesn't have to be in it all the time every week. But I did think, you know, the fact that she has returned, because drama land and theatre land and filmy land is all a bit odd at the moment. You know, she could well come back.
Yeah, there's a lot of land between Dover and Borsetshire, I assume. So, you know, she doesn't have to be in Ambridge. She can move closer. She can sort of, could easily find a position where she could kind of duck in. I mean, I was always surprised that, I would love Joy One, so Vicky, to be back. That would be, you know, I'd love to have Vicky back. And I, you know, as well, and Mike, get them all back. And I'm always surprised that they don't come in for a few cameos. But yeah, I mean, they could have her sort of in Birmingham or kind of, you know, round the corner a bit. They don't have to have her back in Ambridge.
Yeah, and actually she isn't 50 until Christmas, by the way. So maybe it is wishful thinking.
Brilliant. Right, that is B12 Simon over there in Borsal Lethal, possibly even Sparkbrook, because the B12 postcode cat, you know, covers both of those Brummy areas. I don't know which bit of the United Kingdom Erica's in, but she's next on Dumdy Dum.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. It's Erica calling from London. I'm a second time caller rinner up. I've called in before, but I don't think I did my vintage last time. So I've been listening for about 20 years. I think that makes me a Lily, I think. I had to look it up on your website. First major storyline that I'd remember, it wasn't anything big. It was something to do with the Grundys trying to do build a shepherd's hut for Linda, and she was really unhappy about it. But that's the first thing that I really remember. It took me a really long time to figure out who was who, but general comment on the monologues, I've heard it likened to treading water, and I suppose it is. But isn't that why we like the Archers, that it's just very slow and steady, it's character driven, we shouldn't really be caring about explosions and so on. If you want that, go listen to EastEnders or something like that. That said, the episode with Freddie fixing the toilet, was a bit too much, I think. But recently, when we got to see the Aldridges have the monologues with the Aldridges, that was great. That was really good. I'm really loving getting to understand what's going on with Alice and Chris. It's slow and steady. But there are some people's heads that I think we don't need to revisit. So I'm thinking Adam, oh my gosh, really don't need to jump in his head. Harrison, ugh, boring. David, ugh, boring. And please, 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 I'm so glad that nobody's bothered thinking that we need to jump into Ruth's head. So thank you very much, script writers, for that. Just one final thing. Something I'd observed is just what the dynamics are really like with the different relationships. So recently we heard Chris and Alice, but also Lillian and Justin, Jolene and Kenton. Just interesting to see how they get on. And how they think of each other. So thinking about Jolene and Kenton, I was just struck by the weird dynamics. It's all a bit competitive, lacking affection, you know, but interesting nonetheless, because sometimes when you just hear what people are saying, you don't really get the thoughts as well. So I thought that's quite good. And I think it is developing in a way that's entertaining. Don't get me wrong, I'm going to love it when we get back to the normal way of doing the Archers. But for the time being, I think it's all right. Got to be patient. You know, just go with the flow. So that's it from me for now. All right, bye.
Wow, Erica. Another jam-packed call.
Erica's a didgeridoo player, because that must be circular breathing to be able to talk that consistently without hesitation for that amount of time. It's quite impressive.
It was.
Can I let you into her secret?
Mm-hmm.
I edited out some of the gaps. She's actually human.
Okay.
And actually, it was two calls. She ran out of space. She ran out of time. and she went, I need to start again. And I edit them both together. So Erica is actually
I'll send you my tape later on in the week, Royfield, with the everything else I want to say.
Brilliant. She made some really valid points, though, I thought.
Definitely,
Her vintage is interesting, you know, being a Lily and mentioning the shepherd's hut again. Oh, that takes you back, doesn't it?
That's my favourite part of Dumpty Dum, is getting these reminders about the parts of the arches I love so much. I mean, there was a couple last week. I absolutely love the shepherd's hut. Sorry, Kerry, I know I interrupted you,
Go ahead.
I was done. I just, you know, that is my favourite bit, is you hear, like, what was it last week? There was something last week. There's no reason why you should remember, but there was something last week, and I was like, oh, God, I absolutely adore that.
You got
that
really misty eyed, didn't part. You? Was it around 2010 or something?
And it was also, sorry, 2 seconds, Jennifer saying, oh, Brian. That was it. There are the parts of the show that really kind of like hit the heartstrings.
And she did pick up on as well, our Erica, about the dynamics between the couples.
Yes.
And how they're being played out. Yeah.
And she sort of summed it up quite tidily, sort of saying it is odd how they have these kind of petty battles. But she, I think, was more kind of trusting and good spirited in sort of contemplating that we all have this going on at some level in our heads. And maybe this is just what you would see if you were. Yeah, exactly. So I think she was showing a more kind of positive attitude towards it.
So from couples and positivity, we now have our penultimate caller in a row. It's Emma.
Hi, Royfield, Kerry and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Emma in the Ribble Valley here. It's me with the bees. I really was busy last week. I haven't forgotten about all your bee questions, but after a run of nearly 2 weeks of rain, on the one day that it was nice weather, my bees decided to abscond about 25 foot up a tree. So I was a bit busy trying to get them back and helping my neighbour to try and get his bees back as well. So things that you can do to help bees, you can buy your honey from a nice local beekeeper who looks after their bees and respects them. The stuff in the supermarkets is made on a massive scale, and I'm not sure that they're that bothered about the bees. It's more about the honey. And also, the stuff that's in there might not necessarily be honey. It could have been watered down with the sugar solution, as happened in a certain big supermarket earlier this year. Other than that, let the weeds grow in your garden. My bees love the clover. They love dandelions. So just it's an excuse to let your garden go. And I have nothing else to say really this week. The arches has been a bit meh, so I can't even remember what happened to comment on it. Hope you're all well. Take care. Speak again. Bye.
I'm so glad Emma called back in. And I'm also glad to hear that there's other people who can't remember what happened in the week to comment on it. But supermarket honey not being honey and being all watered down and... We need to all seek out our local beekeepers to buy our honey from.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And I, for one, am hoping that this is not just going to be two calls and done about bees.
Yeah.
So I think we implore you, Emma, to maybe call in on a monthly basis, you know, and overtax you with this and give us an upkeep on your hive. And other bee related matters. What do you reckon, Peter?
I am contemplating becoming an apiarist. So is that the correct word? But yeah.
Are you really though? Are you just saying that for a cheap pun?
I returned. I was home last week in London, and there were too many bees. So it's very much a, if you're given bees, make honey kind of scenario. And my family have previous, my aunt is an apiarist. So I'm thinking I should give it a go.
Yeah. I'd like to hear from Emma how she got the bees that had absconded up a tree, how you get them down. What happens?
You want to steal Emma's bees?
I'm going to go around Brighton looking for bees that I can get from trees. No, but she's helped, you know, she did that with her own bees and her neighbours. What do you do to get them down? What happens?
And how can you tell which bees belong to where? This bee over here, you know, come down to mine, the bee over there, no, shoo, 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 you go to the neighbours. Like, how do you know? You see,
yeah, I don't want to go door to door in South East London. I'm not becoming an apiarist. There's absolutely no way I'm going. It's a bit needles and knives in the part of London I live in. So I probably, I'm not going door to door. No, it's off.
I'm now imagining, you know, those posts that you see on lampposts of missing cats. An A4 sheet of paper with a picture of a bee.
I couldn't. You made a statement, Peter, at the start of answering this call, which I just could not believe. You said you went home to London this weekend and you saw too many bees. I haven't seen too many bees since about the age of 10.
This was, as you remember it, the sunny days of the late 70s and early 80s where, you know, the nighttime never came, out playing football until your parents called you in and you were being stung every 5 minutes, it felt. You know, like life was just one massive kind of trip to see your mum because you got another, you know, like your eyes swollen or something. Too many bees. You couldn't count them. It was quite something.
There's loads of bees in my garden too.
This should cheer Royfield up. He was really quite glum when bees.
Totally. Well, fundamentally, bees are taking a bit of a kick in. And anything we can do to protect them, I'm all for. So you saying that there were too many bees in London, I'm saying you must have gone into some time warp continuum, sir.
Because gone back to the 70s. Loads of weeds, because she said let your weeds grow. Are there weeds in your garden?
Yeah, there is a lavender bush about the size of a small family car. In our tiny garden, it's mostly lavender bush. I think that's your answer.
Yeah.
Is it, or is it just a big pile of weeds, Peter? You're just trying to style it out.
No. Luckily, the rest of our garden was squashed by building materials, so the lavender bush was the only bit left. So yeah, it's scorched earth. I mean, thank you for your concern, Royfield, but my garden is kempt by only, but only has because it's been covered for the last 6 months.
Smashing. Right, now we've got that cleared up. Beth is bringing up the rear.
Hello, Royfield, Kerry and Peter. It's Beth here from Warrington. I rang in last week in support of Adam, and I must say I was a little disappointed in your response, but I'll let that pass. I thought this week's episodes were all very good, all linked by the theme of family and what family means. It was good to hear Adam juggling family life and problems with the business. I thought the talk of Roger in Scotland and then a discussion of Xander's biological parentage was foreshadowing a future plotline. Here is my plot prediction. Roger will succumb to the coronavirus. Adam and Debbie will travel to Scotland for the funeral. Adam will, of course, bump into Charlie. He'll follow his heart and a custody battle will ensue. Adam, biological parent, versus Ian, primary carer. Lexi could return, supporting Team Ian, and Jennifer and the Aldridges, Team Adam. Well, that's it from me. Bye for now.
Wow, Beth. Apologise for the response to your Adam love last week. That's a good plot prediction, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd like to listen to that.
I think it's utterly stunning. And it has to be said just very quickly because people are saying, she's referring to things 2 weeks ago. Beth was one of the callers along with Emma who didn't quite make the cut for last week's show because she sent in her caller in a bit of a missive whilst we were actually recording. So that's the reason why it might feel slightly out of time.
But brilliant, isn't it? You know, Roger dies, yes. Adam and Debbie go to the funeral, bumps into Charlie. Custody battle. it escalates quite quickly.
I think who would you be? I think I'd be on Team Adam in the custody battle. I know that we've been giving
you
Adam
just don't Ian, like really. Ian. That's all.
I really saying. Don't like Ian. Yeah. Sorry, this was supposed to be my positive episode. I was supposed to try and be positive the whole way through. I nearly made it and I just, you know, screwed up. I was horrible about Ian. Sorry, everyone.
No, you weren't horrible. You just prefer Adam to Ian.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. I'm a massively positive Adam fan. Mm. Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, which is weird, but you know.
Oh, Beth, thanks for that. We have to try and get this episode down to a nice, tight 90 minutes. And I'm going to struggle in the edit, Kerry. So I'm going to say this very quickly, and I hope your answer is going to be in the negative. But do you have any emails this week?
No, nobody wrote to us.
Well, I'm actually quite happy, though. I'm actually equally angry as well. So what what is the matter with you, Dumpty Dummers? You know the drill. Some of you have a voice phobia and you don't want to get on the old speak pipe. So you can like text, you can email. However, in this circumstance, because these pair of bloviators have gone on for so long, I'm actually quite happy because it means that the edit will be tighter. So we'll come back, the other five. So we'll come back after a couple of minutes and it'll be a touch of the Millie Bell.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And you best enjoy this because you start to wind down her tenure with us. Millie Bell, you're up.
Good day, everyone. Well, in the middle of the week, we were talking about whether we are managing to socially distance during human interaction and whether it involved a penny. Now, obviously, I know what a penny is because I'm from the UK, but not everybody did. However, Melly McMerriweather said, I always wear a penny in the house until I'm done with domestics. During lockdown, my neighbours took great joy in the youngest in the street, bar one, wearing a penny. Added it to the list of things, I don't give a hoot what folk think of me. Sandra Jenkinson said, if I'm not wearing my penny when the window cleaner knocks, he comments on it. And Yvonne Rees said, of course, and a supply of cupcakes to fling from a distance and unexpected visitors. Rob Williams said, I just stare out the little window in the door until they go away. And apparently in Canada, a penny is one of those little loose fitting vests that you have of different colours when you're playing netball or whatever. I didn't know that, so now we're all a little bit more informed. Then later in the week, we were discussing who is your favourite Usher, and thanks to Jolene for this suggestion. What I find really interesting is when I wrote it, I meant Archer, but we have written about everybody. Catherine Stafford said, favourite is a strange term. I feel for Clary and Hayley, but I wouldn't want to spend an evening with them in the bull. Sam Johnson said, I'm fickle.
and it depends on their storylines. At the moment, I'm liking Freddie after always thinking him a complete stereotypical privileged tit. Helen Ostrich said, I don't like any of the current ones and get fed up of their personality changes. And Van Villette also said, I'm for Team Freddie. He's so well acted and has developed into a convincing product of his parents and background. He is the new Nigel. I guess we are going to let Freddie. He's half of an archer, isn't he? But he's really a partiter. But he's half an archer, so we'll let him on the list. Linda Cuddy said, I've always liked David, but also like Roy and Susan, who are not archers, but they are in the archers. And so Stuart Sandham picked this up and said, with the archer name Jolene, all of the Brookfield archers get on my nerves. So do the Bodge Farm ones. The rest of the characters I like except Philip. That S storyline needs to be ditched, in my opinion. Oh, also, I cannot be doing with Adam and Ian and that wretched gurgling baby noise every 2 minutes. Brian and Jennifer, however, are a joy. Couldn't agree more. And then I wondered whether we would all be tuning in to Radio Borsetshire for regular police updates from Harrison. And Doreen Kingham said, doesn't he drone on? No spark at all. Rob Williams said he described an ongoing fight between two pensioners wielding hedge trimmers and still managed to make it boring. The only way he'll get a radio slot is to make the Susan decision seem more sensible. Julie Lindsay said, sounds like not a loss, I missed it all. And Sue Howard said, his radio interview will have struck a chord with Borsetshire listeners as well as TA listeners. It did with the village and Fallon. Well, that's true. And Zoe Taylor said, oh my God, no, rather have the Friday night episode of Dead Ringers, which had another Archer's parody. Woohoo! I don't hear those over here. I must try and get onto that. Anyway, it was it is hard maintaining a robust conversation when we have so little from each episode, but you're doing a great job and you're certainly keeping me amused, everyone. So thank you. And next week it will be your quip. So until I speak to you again in a fortnight, I say to you, hooray.
Thank you for that, Millie Bell. And we're going to have to give a right royal send-off because you're just going to warm the dum-de-dum social media seat for maybe another couple of weeks before the new posse kind of like assume their duties. So, Millie Bell, I'm not going to give you a proper right rousing send-off right now, but we do thank you for everything that you've done, and we look forward to, well, we don't look forward to it like in glee or anything like that, but your next missive will be a good one, no doubt, and we'll give you a proper send-off then for all your long service years of doing the dum-de-dums. Kerry,
yes,
can we have some side-splittingly funny tweets to help round off this episode of Dum-de-Dum?
Well, I'll give you some tweets. they always seem to be by the same people. I think maybe one of you two should choose the tweets another week because I attracted to the same sorts of tweets. Anyway, the first one is from Morrissey Girl. Who is Griselda Strange, and she said, maybe cut out the middleman and just date Jolene, Liz, which I thought was quite an interesting one. Then there was Jenny Prigg, who is at Falmouth Jen. She put, so tell me, please, if Harrison was promoted, what were the others like? Or is it because he's the only one?
Harsh.
Aww.
I think that tweet is not in keeping with the tenor of the week because most people were very touched.
Ditch that then. Ditch, abort, yeah. Alison, who's at Nozilla_63, she says, I vote for calling this peacock Garibaldi, forever a reminder that he replaced the squashed Eccles. That's good, isn't it? Eccles, Garibaldi, squashed. That's not the tweet of the week, by the way. Then now tweet of the week, it's by A Bit Buddish, which is I'm Buddish, which is why you guys need to choose the tweets because I keep choosing him. He put, Mrs. Duncan needn't have involved the police. The whole thing could have been much better handled by a privet investigator.
A.
Ah, oh, very good.
Well done. Yeah. Well done. Folks,
It's a privet hedge, Royfield. Did you get it? Privet hedge.
Thank you for that, Peter. Smashing. Dumdydum.com, folks. Go there.
No problem.
It's got all manner of stuff. And I say go at dumdydum.com because you can buy things from our shop. Somebody bought something from our shop this week. It was a mug. It was a mug that came emblazoned with the words dum-dee-dum, or maybe the word actually, not words, dum-dee-dum on it. And I'm sure it's going to be perfect for holding all of their hot beverages within the self-same receptacle. Now, if you would like to maybe purchase a mug, a t-shirt, or some bit of apparel that says dum-dee-dum, why don't you go to dum-dee-dum.com and go on to our shop. Hit shop. Shop is means store for our American listeners. So the translation is go to dum-dee-dum.com, hit store for our American listeners, and you can buy some merch. And it helps to keep the good lights on in Dum-dee-dum Towers whilst we're going through the pandemic. So dum-dee-dum.com. You can also go on to YouTube. And if you type in Dum-dee-dum or even Royfield, you'll get all of our Zooms in full glorious Technicolor. You'll see me floundering for words and fawning over the actors of The Archers. You'll see Kerry Warbis with her luxurious mane of red hair, just being very chill and very cool. You won't see Pete Fickling because he's, I think he's wiping his little one's, Cyrus's bum or something or another, or doing some kind of parenting duty, you know, and manfully and lovingly doing it, as opposed to Adam, who was dragged into it and then thought that he'd done this miraculous thing just for one day. Pete Fickling is the type of father that we all need and want in our lives. He's committed. He's, and that's the reason why he's not on the Zooms. And he won't be there, you know, having a drink with us on Friday whilst we sit down with Sonny Ormond, who plays Lillian Bellamy. But what we'll do, we'll have a camera just pointed at a wall with an empty glass to represent our Pete, and we can all just raise a glass to him whilst he's wiping a bum, changing a nappy, and just doing dad type things. So that's Friday, 7 o'clock on the Zooms. You can also watch us on YouTube if you don't want to get in with the Zoom action. So there are options for you. So that's that. Kerry, I don't know what I'm talking about. My mouth's just run away with me. Please rescue me by saying something that is in red.
Okay. If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105. Leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send a text message starting with Dum to 077-862-00690.
We talk about Twitter all the time and its importance to the whole genus. That is Dumpty Dum. You can follow us on Twitter, where we are at Dumpty Dum. Kerry Warbis, how can people find you on the Twitters?
I'm at Kerry Warbis, which is spelt K-E-R-I.
You can find me on the Twitters, where I'm at Royfield. Now, normally I would say, Peter, where can people find you on the Twitters? And it would say Pete Fickling. But Peter's had some connection issues and he's just messaged me on WhatsApp to say, Royford, I've got connection issues. So he's gone. He's already changing a nappy and is on father duty. So he's gone. But he's Pete Fickling. And of course, if you want some funny tweets, you can also follow at Lucy V. Freeman on Twitter. Now, Facebook. Facebook is the biggest social media network on the planet. There's like 2 billion people on there. And if you go into that jungle, that maelstrom, that crowd of people, and you fight past them, you'll find not only fans of The Archers, you'll find Dum-dee-dummers. So if you don't want to drop kick all the 2 billion people out the way just to find yourself the Dum-dee-dummers or The Archers fans on Facebook, just type in Dum-dee-dum. And you'll get there. You'll get onto our page, which is becoming a group very soon. And that means that you can join with us on Facebook, Auntie Kerry Warbis. Mm. What's going to be your takeaway of the whole week the whole week, which we've just been served up to us by the BBC, the goings on in the minds of the citizens, the denizens of Ambridge.
I think it is to be more positive and to be in touch with our feelings and verbalise those.
There you go, people. Wise words from Auntie Kerry Warburton. Wish her luck online dating.
Oh, yes. I need a lot of that.
Will you keep us abreast of your... goings and comings. Ooh, that sounded a bit wrong. I was struggling with the appropriate word, which didn't have some kind of sexual connotation. It just came out all wrong.
I'll keep you updated, yes.
Brilliant. Okay.